Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 115, Bachot's Blueprint. Matsuo Kinsaku, later came to be known as Matsuo Bachot, or Bachot, considered the first master of haiku poetry. He lived from 1644 to 1694. One of his students or followers gifted him a banana plant, which he planted in his yard at his home, his hermitage. And that's what Bachot means, banana plant. Around 1682 or 3, after his hermitage burned down, he studied Zen. He studied for about 10 years. His most well-known book, Narrow Road to the Deep North, or Narrow Road to the Interior, which is a travel journal of haibun and haiku. Bachot helped elevate the art of haiku and put it on the world stage. This is your host, Monk. Thanks for listening. Each of us has different ways of talking to ourselves, whether it's sort of mantras or sayings or affirmations or things that friends or family or ancestors, anybody, famous people have said that we use to help us get through the day. And haiku, I've found over the years, haiku fits this category in a kind of affirmation, mantra, and sometimes like the Zen koans. And so this show is going to talk about Bachot's haiku, one of the most well-known haiku. And part of the mantra of this, he's got another one that is, one translation is, along this road goes no one this autumn eve. Or autumn eve, along this road goes no one. And a bunch of years ago, I used to get in the car to go home after an event and be like 12 o'clock at night. It would be dark out. And, you know, even though as a adult, it would still be a little bit of anxiety or a little bit of feeling of aloneness of driving at night. And then I would say that haiku to myself and it would calm me down because it would remind me to sort of be no one and just connect with the driving and the night and the trees and whatever. It would take the attention off myself. So I found that to be a very helpful kind of mantra haiku, and everybody, you know, would have their own, the ones that fit them the best. But now the Haiku Society of America has their magazine called Frog Pond. So probably the most well-known is Basho's Haiku, which has hundreds of translations, some humorous, some serious. Perhaps the best known ones, R.H. Blyde's translation is one of them in the Haiku 4 volume. The old pond, a frog jumps in, the sound of water. And there's At the Old Pond, The Old Pond, William Higginson, who was a major force in the modern haiku movement. He's got perhaps one of the more concise ones. Old Pond, a frog leaps in, water's sound. So there you get into the, you know, sound of water, water sound. You get into the editing aspect of it and the translation aspect of it in Japanese, just to hear how it sounds. I probably read this before, but had a Japanese woman phoneticize this for me, so I'll do my best. Furu ikiya kowazu tobikomu mizu no oto. So that's what it sounds like in Japanese. Now, Blythe also updates his translation and says that more likely the sound of it, or the way it's phrased out, would be something like the old pond, the sound of a frog jumping into the water. Now, I don't know, I kind of get what he's getting at, but it's a little awkward there. There isn't necessarily the sound of the jumping, but it's sort of up for interpretation as to whether it's the moment, what happens at the moment that the frog hits the water, because that's the sound of water or water sound, but it's of the frog hitting the water, going into the water. So there's a kind of a oneness moment there that transcends the labels, and that in itself is something one can contemplate on, like a koan. What is that moment of frog water sound? So that's something there. Now this haiku definitely fits the koan mode, because I had heard when I first started getting into haiku more deeply that this haiku was supposedly something to do with enlightenment or awakening. And that aha moment, the splash, being that moment, and but it was about, if I remember correctly, about 6 years before it suddenly, you know, it just suddenly dawned on me the depth of this haiku. So that's what I'm accentuating, and I'm gonna read this short essay that was published in the Haiku Society of America journal, Frog Pond, and then I'm say a few more notes. And it felt good to get in that, especially because when I first submitted it, the editor told me, he was like, oh no, not another interpretation of Basho's Frog Pond. But anyway, he printed it, so it's called Basho's Blueprint. That's boring, a fifth grader exclaimed after I read Basho's Frog Pond haiku to an elementary school class. In a manner of speaking, he was accurate. Nothing much really happens. You might as well say a leaf fell or a flower bloomed. All lovely and amazing, yet rather ordinary as far as a poem, right? Not so fast. So what is it that makes Basho's classic, not boring, fascinating, in fact, one of the most well-known and oft-referred-to haiku? When I first got into studying haiku and talking about the form with other poets, I heard of how this famous one was an example of enlightenment. That made some sense to me, the frog splash being a moment of aha awakening, yet something was missing. About 6 years, one day it dawned on me, personal frog splash moment, that Basho's haiku is a blueprint for everyday, providing a means for deep connection with natural surroundings, the connecting the timeless with the present moment, and for transcending the incongruities of the modern world. First of all, the poem is simply a lovely moment, an exciting little depiction of a nature scenario. On another level, the scene pond is the ancient and eternal, as well as the clear, empty mind. The frog is beingness and potential action. The water sound, splash, is the subsequent confluence. the revelatory now happening within and without. Using Basho's blueprint, I wrote these. In the garden, a butterfly cruises through without a sound. At the old folks' home, a grandchild visits, the sound of laughter. Upon receiving the previous issue of this Frog Pond Journal, opening Frog Pond, the sound of biodegradable wrapper. But does this formulaic writing diminish Basho's, turning it into a kind of refrigerator magnet Mad Libs poetry? I don't think so, though I admit I typically don't try to write haiku using this format. Yet, even Basho himself uses this blueprint. Winter solitude. In a world of one color, the sound of wind. Winter solitude. In a world of one color, the sound of wind. Beyond haiku, I call it Basho's blueprint because it has become one of my mantras for making whole what seems like incongruous moments or experiences. This world is ancient, and moment typically follows moment with nothing much unusual happening. However, every moment holds the possibility of something different, life-changing, enlightening. For more variations, there's Hiroaki Sato's 100 Frogs, which includes over 100 translations plus a number of adaptations and parodies. Those you can find online. Hiroaki Sato, last name S-A-T-O. There's one, like, I think of Ginsberg, Allen Ginsberg, where he says kerplunk. It actually gives the sort of onomatopoetic sound. So, and a lot of people have different fun with it. Now, all that considered, now the thing that gets me the most, and obviously what is the emphasis and really the raison d'etre for doing this particular show is to show how that haiku, at least for me in my experience, and I presume some other people, maybe not for the same reasons, but it kind of gets me out of those moments where I start to think about stuff too much or have an existential questioning about what is the nature of reality. Probably the best way I can describe this is just to say that it's like in any given day, I think about the sort of routines, the things we do, you know, pretty much every day, and the sort of connection, you know, a lot of spiritual traditions, native ways teach us to connect with the, you know, the timeless and the ancient. So have that. Then there's the okay, but now I've got to go to the grocery store because I'm out of milk or I'm out of toilet paper or something very, you know, very in the moment. And I start thinking about, okay, I got this timeless track going, but then there's this milk and where did this milk come from? And it was milked, you know, last week from a cow. And it sort of, things start to get almost a little, you know, hyper trying to think about the moment or what's going on. It becomes very active, and that gets me into another track of the daily grind and what's going on in the moment. And it's all very, this is all there is in this moment. So taking those two, so I guess that for me, the existential moments are that kind of, how do I connect these two things? How do I connect this timeless, ancient, just take a deep breath and let it all ride kind of view with the, this is the moment, this is now, you need this, you got to do this, and this person helped to make this, and this is blah, 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 and this is what you do. So it's, how do I combine those two together? Well, you already know the answer. That's where the haiku comes in. At the old pond, a frog jumps in, the sound of water. So that, there's the, at the old pond, that's the ancient, every day, what's going on, and then every day has its frog moment or moments, you know, and those can be positive or negative, pleasant or unpleasant. I think sometimes of the attacks on the World Trade Center September 11th, it was 2001. Everybody pretty much remembers it was just like clear blue skies. So it was sort of a eerie memory, but just beautiful blue skies. And out of nowhere, quote unquote, comes the those airplanes and the towers and the smoke and the clouds and the all that stuff, powder. And so it had that. So that's sort of a traumatic or negative example. But then again, we have the positive examples. Someone, a phone call from a friend you haven't heard from in a while, or pleasant surprise. Someone sends you a gift, or just invites you out for dinner, or something that comes in that is that haiku splash, that frog splash moment. So I think whether it's with specific moments that are highlight that, it's applicable. And then also just to everyday, very everyday simple things, using the old cooking pot that you had for umpteen years, and then suddenly thinking, well, tonight I'm going to make something new. So just that combination, that connection of the ancient and the present, and what the effect is, the sound of the water, how it plays out. So that's really the gist of it. I'm just reminded a little bit now of that, the deeper level of being able to hold two opposites together. And I've heard this described in the Andean philosophy from the Andes Mountains, the Inca, I think that is, and talking about the modern world, and it's a very inclusive way, an indigenous way of thinking, of holding opposites, or things that don't necessarily go together. And rather than just yay, nay, acceptance, rejection, right, wrong, all the kind of dualistic thinking one can get into, it's a way of just sitting with the opposites and finding the connection, or at least having them get along with each other in the kind of two-row way of the Haudenosaunee. And just to sum up, the actual pictograph for the haiku reflects this as well. It's made of two pictures, two ideograms. One is of a person, and then what translates as two sides opposite each other, abstract notion of opposition, contradiction. And then below that is, with that is a phrase or a sentence. And the picture for that is to wrap, envelop a tangle of plants plus a mouth. So that's where I came up with the subtitle for my haiku and book anthology of poems and how to write haiku. Haiku, one breath, a voice through a tangle, because it's mentioned in some of the Zen texts about consciousness, awareness, or raising one's consciousness is sort of extricating oneself, however that word is, from tangles and confusions that we tend to layer, or we tend to come from having layered things into confusion and problems. And it's really the clarity comes from the unraveling and seeing how simple stuff really is, but sometimes takes a while to get there. But as far as the haiku itself, there is, and if it's not something I consciously think about when writing haiku, but if you look at some really good haiku, and one of the sort of underlying formulas of it is that there is a tension, a kind of tension of opposites that would get resolved typically in the third line. It's like a mini denouement or a mini climax to the performance or whatever. So just to emphasize that the haiku, or whatever other kinds of sayings, that different cultures have their sayings and aphorisms and one-liners and Confucius say and all kinds of short tidbits and sayings, a stitch in time saves nine, things that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, all these little sayings that we have that are part of the collective conscious are helpful to us, and especially around this time of year, and that from the haiku sense, that and in a consciousness sense, being able to hold those two things that may seem opposite or contradictory or not seem to exactly dovetail, but yet sometimes in a way they do dovetail deeper. And we give thanks to the Zen the Zen nature of Matsuo Basho, who gave us that wonderful haiku. Old pond, a frog jumps in, waters sound. At the old pond, a frog jumps in, waters sound. Thank you for listening.
And we'll go out with a song that the choice may seem corny, but it's actually a beautiful song. I really love it. And it connects with something that Basho said, because the song is a sort of childlike or song for child adults. And Basho said, to write good haiku, get a 3-foot child, meaning that haiku has a lot to do with seeing the world with the innocence and Zen beginner's mind that a child has. So this is Kermit the Frog singing and playing the banjo, Rainbow Connection.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows, and what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. It's so-